We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Newbery Award-winning author Kelly Barnhill recently wrote in the New York Times about her bout with her loss of the ability to write after her brain injury. In December of 2021, Kelly fell down the stairs and was unconscious for 15 minutes. But what is the most alarming thing here is that she has no memory of it. Now she is suffering from post-concussive syndrome and can no longer write, which means that her newest book, the middle grade fantasy The Ogress and the Orphans, might be her last book ever written. And I'm honored to have Kelly Barnhill here on The Spark with us today to discuss her syndrome and her newest book. I am honored. Hello, Kelly. How are you doing today?
It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So let's just get right into things here. It's going to sound very forward, but can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Yeah, you know, first of all, I should mention that this was not my first concussion. I'm a bit of a klutz, as I've learned, and also terribly unlucky. And one thing that I have learned about post-concussive syndrome is that the more concussions you have, the longer it takes to recover. And it's like any other injury, right? You know, our bodies respond with inflammation, right? Your bum knee, that every time you knock it out, it just takes longer, right? Mm-hmm. The brain is no different. So I was, I do remember walking up the stairs, to turn the light off in my kid's bedroom. And so I don't know what happened next, if I missed a step, if I tripped on the dog, or some other dumb thing. But what I do know is that my husband heard a loud sound, and a big thunk. And he found me at the bottom of the stairs, completely unconscious.
Oh my gosh.
And then the next period of time is, you know, kind of a blur. I know they took me to the hospital and did a bunch of things over there. But part of recovering from a concussion is that you don't remember a lot of things. It's actually pretty common, to not remember the point of fall or even the period of time leading up to it as well.
So how has this affected your ability to write? What is it that you can and cannot do any longer, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, that's totally fine. So it's interesting. I mean, first of all, you know, all of this happened and 2 months later, I had a book come out. Mm. And 2 months after that, I had another book come out.
Wow.
And so I had to somehow manage the rollout of these pieces of literature while, you know, being just not my full self. Mm-hmm. So there was that that particular conundrum. But in the midst of all of that, one of the things that can happen to people, particularly in the early days after a concussion, is aphasia. And so I had to relearn how to speak sentences without losing words. And that was a very tricky operation and kind of scary. Mm. And another thing is fatigue and brain fog, which I had never experienced brain fog before, but boy, it's terrible. Mm. My heart is out to anybody who's experiencing it right now. And the third thing, and the thing that was really tricky with writing, is that I had to relearn how to write in cursive.
Oh.
So I all of my books I write in longhand, and there's something very sort of cognitively dynamic with cursive writing. It's one of the reasons why they will reteach people how to write in cursive, like after a stroke or other kinds of anyway, as you can see, I sometimes still lose words even now. Anyway, after some kind of brain event, right? And so I had to relearn how to write in cursive. And so I literally bought those workbooks that we had when we were children, Dunalien or whatever, and practicing writing the letter A sort of again and again. I had to practice writing a full word without my hand and brain getting lost in it. And as I was doing that, that was also when I was kind of relearning how to slow down and allow my sentences to sort of fall into place. I learned how I'm kind of a fast talker, as you can probably hear, which is also a problem. And so learning how to slow down and allowing my brain to find the words without panicking about finding the words, right? Which allowed me to not have those moments of aphasia, which are really troubling and kind of scary, I think, for people. It certainly was scary for me.
When did you know that something wasn't right? Was it the next day? Was it when you were out with a family? When were you able to pinpoint that, hold on, something's not right here?
Yeah, I mean, certainly right away, there was no question that I was very injured. And again, I had another concussion, a few years earlier, when I tripped when I was running. I had another concussion when I slipped on the ice while I was running. I've had these things happen before, so it wasn't my first rodeo. I knew to expect that I was going to be really tired, that I would have really bad headaches, that I would, have sensitivity to light and sound. I knew all of that was going to happen, right? And so did the people around me. And so what I did start to notice, though, that it was just lasting a lot longer than it did before. And so, but also that things were happening in my life that I wasn't remembering. We went to Florida to celebrate the holiday with family, and I had no memory of it at all by January. So I was realizing that that had happened, and that was troubling. But also, the way in which an injured brain responds to that injury is by really, prioritizing sleep. People who have gotten a concussion are really, really tired. And this is true of a lot of neurological injuries. It's one of the reasons why people with long COVID are so tired, right? Because neurological injury is really exhausting. Our neurons are so complex and so dynamic that it just takes, and our brains are such an energy suck for our entire bodies. They use more energy than any other part of our body does. So of course it takes a lot of energy. And so I was, I was sleeping probably 18 to 20 hours a day. I would sleep 10 hours at night, and then I would be up for a little bit, and then I would take a 4-hour nap, and then be up for a little bit, and then take another 4-hour nap. I mean, it was just so much sleeping. And we knew that that was on its way, that that was what that we knew that that was the experience. But my husband and I started to realize that that wow, this is just lasting way longer. The other thing was double vision. So I wasn't able to drive for about 9 months after my injury, because I was just seeing double all the time, and so it, which was one of the reasons why that's another reason why you're so tired is just the work of seeing becomes so again energy dense. So I could bring my vision together, but it was a lot of work, and as the day went, so it would make me tired, and then as I would get tired, it was harder and harder to do. And I remember there was one time I was sitting there next to my husband on the couch, and I said, you know, I see two of you right now. And he said, lucky for you, I'm so handsome, which fair, true facts. And so all of this, I mean, in the face of all of this, it wasn't even occurring to me that like, it's going to be hard to write fiction again. And that really came later on, and I realized there were two things going on. I mean, first of all, so one of the things that I started to do was, I would just write a sentence on a note card, mm-hmm. right? And I knew that I needed to have some kind of creative practice, and I knew that I was really tired. And I knew that even like writing emails, looking at screens was really, really hard for me at the time. Mm. I would have to have somebody read it to me and then tell them what to write. This was also true. So I had one more book that was sort of in the pipeline, and we were still in the midst of copy edits. And my family had to help me with that. They would say, okay, the editor says this, you know, do you agree or not? And I would have to listen and respond. And again, I could only do it for very short periods of time before I would have to go and lie down. So I had this, I knew that I just needed to make something beautiful every day. Just a sentence that pleased me, that looked correct on the card, and that felt good to say. And that was really the extent of my creative life. After a little while, I was able to do more, but I still wasn't able to write fiction. And one of the things that we have to do as writers when we're writing fiction is that we're holding a lot of thoughts all at once, right? We are holding all of these discrete pieces of information about each character, about each character's arc, about these moments of light in this scene and this scene and this scene, and we're holding them all together at once, all at the same time. It's really a lot of work. Right. It requires you to be holding a lot of thoughts at once. I used to describe it as having a room full of pins, and you have to set little globes on each one and set them spinning, and then try not to let any of them fall. That's what it felt like for me writing fiction. And one of the things that became very clear to me in my recovery is that I was really only able to hold one thought at a time. And I made all kinds of tasks, like normal tasks just around the house, really hard. Suddenly it took, you know, 3 hours to empty the dishwasher. The laundry was a monumental task. Just sweeping the floor just took forever because all of those, we don't really think of these like just simple household tasks as being very sort of like cognitively complex, that we're holding a lot of things, that we're doing a lot of things at once, but we actually are. It's why we still don't have household robots, right? Because these jobs are hard. I realized that I'm really only able to hold one thought at a time, which on one hand, and one of the reasons why I was able to realize this, that this is what was going on with me, is that for the first time in a long time, I was not experiencing anxiety. At all. I've had anxiety my whole life. That's sort of like racing thoughts and like, you know, you're stacking all kinds of things. So anxiety is a narrative disorder, and it requires us to stack a lot of thoughts all really sometimes extremely high all the way up to the sky, right? And you're sort of like cycling through back and forth and up and down. And by only having one thought in my head at a time, it meant that I no longer had that anxiety response to really anything, which was kind of awesome, you know? But also I couldn't do this work that I loved, which was devastating. So it was sort of a the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away kind of a situation, you know?
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, like it's okay. You know, like I actually do have this sense of peace about it, that that I'm able to I'm able to, you know, sit and think about this experience. And I was able to write an essay. It took me forever. Boy, oh boy, did it take me forever. And I could only do it by writing one sentence at a time on cards. That's how I was able to take on that task. But the story that I was telling was only about me, right?
Yeah.
I didn't have to hold multiple thoughts and notions and pieces of information together. All I had to do was, you know, write one sentence at a time and assemble it literally on the floor of my office. Until it kind of looked right and I could like get it all to hang together. Fiction doesn't work that way.
Before we get into the meat and potatoes and the details of that, how did you write this book?
Well, I'll tell you what. So the Ogres and the Orphans, of course, is before my most recent concussion, although after my last one. But what was interesting about the Ogres and the Orphans is that I had the idea for this book, and I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to execute it. It began literally as a picture book. I thought I was writing a picture book, which is hilarious because it's a 400 page novel. Ha ha ha. But I really, you know, we were in this period of time where, you know, sort of midway through the last presidential administration. Mm-hmm. And I was noticing just the tenor of how people spoke to one another was getting meaner and more grasping, that people were using this kind of negativity and this demeaning language as a way of elevating themselves, as being able to get on, you know, like whatever news programs and getting people to write checks.
Yeah.
And that was so devastating for me. And so I was playing with this idea of what does it mean to be a good neighbor? What does it mean to have a beloved community? What does that mean? And what happens if you have a beloved community that loses its way and loses its mind, right? And I wasn't really sure how to do that. I wasn't sure how that would work in a story. And so I was playing around with fairy tales. Whenever I sort of have a time in my life when I'm not writing, where I'm not really feeling it, I return to fairy tales, which is always the source for me. And I just was writing myself fairy tales every single day, and then recycling them. It was like chalk drawings, you know. And then I had one that just was sort of sticking around and wasn't leaving me alone. And so I messed with it and messed with it and messed with it until finally, like, I had it in my head of how I wanted the book to sound, how I wanted the story to be told. And I started writing it, and it was January of 2020. When I started writing this book, and in earnest, I mean, at the time, you know, we heard about this virus that was, you know, far, far away, and people were worried that it would come here, but like probably it wouldn't, and probably would sort of stay away, but it seemed kind of scary. We weren't really sure. There is a moment in the book where it talks about a community that like was, you know, sort of like wonderful and giving and functional, and then something happened to cause people to close their doors and to separate and to not speak to their neighbors anymore. It was weird that I was writing that literally as we were starting to shut down, which was a strange place to be, you know. And then I finished that book, which, you know, also, you know, involves the burning down of a library, which was sort of this seminal, terrible event. Right as there was this eruption of rage and pain and disappointment in my city in Minneapolis that June. So it was a strange time to be writing a book. It was a strange time to be writing a book that was like, that felt like it was being pushed against by the world as it was happening, you know? And then it was a strange time to be, out like discussing it with, you know, children and readers in sort of a, in my broken state. But at the same time, like as hard as all of that was, it is still like a, it's an experience I treasure at the same time. Like if it is true, if this is my last book, and I don't know, I'm just sort of like, I'm willing to sort of like, accept the world as it sort of accepts me and to accept whatever path that I'm on, with sort of love and grace. If this is my last book, like I'm okay with that, because it mattered so much to me, like the writing of it mattered so much to me, the sharing of it mattered so much to me. If this is how I go out, awesome.
Is that how I feel? So Kelly, we have about 45 seconds left here. So what is next? If you could tell us real quick.
Well, great question. So I had a book come out this last year that I wrote before but came out after, called The Crane Husband, which is a deeply, deeply weird book. And I hope that people like it. Other than that, you know, continuing to live and breathe and seek beauty. And maybe that will be written down, and maybe that will just be written on my heart. I don't know.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I will tell you this, Kelly, you said that laundry is a monumental task for you now. I'll tell you this, laundry is always a monumental task. I want to thank you for joining us on The Spark today. This has been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yes, indeed.